Chapter 10. Who? He asked. It doesn't matter. I might be wrong. Why, then? He asked patiently. It felt like pulling out one of her own teeth. Because someone in Milan didn't want me to leave. The convent? Why do Protestants think like that? No. Reluctantly, she added, a man. Ah. The knowing word made her want to hit him, but at least he was taking her seriously now. A dangerous man? Yes. He considered that a moment. Then we had best make all speed. I can write letters to make sure these wretches don't harm anyone in the future. He turned to tell the postillion to forget the cart and bring in the post-horses, and his men to help ready the chaise. Petra was left mutely staring at crisp efficiency. She had her way, however, and hurried to fold her cloak, muddy as it was, and stuff it into the boot. Did she have time to change into her cleaner habit, or privacy in which to do it? Robin came over. If you're pursued, we should change your appearance. Out of the habit. Petra felt the old reluctance to leave its concealment, but it might confuse Vatsi. How? We could look in the house. Steal. We'll leave money. Anything in there will be dirty. A nun is a very easy trail to follow. Indeed. Why hadn't she thought of that back in Milan? She'd not thought anyone would pursue her beyond the Alps, however. The old woman's in there, she warned. Is she likely to have a gun? I don't think so. Wouldn't they have used a gun last night if they had one? Then we can handle her. He took his own pistol out of his pocket, saying, What do you think she has done? Drunk herself silly if she has the means. Very well. Come on. The yard was still muddy, but not deep enough to cause trouble, even for her sandals. Robin opened the door and they stepped inside. There was no sign of the old woman, but something, rats or mice, leapt off the table to scurry away. The fire was dead, the candle merely a puddled lump. Could she have run away? Robin wondered. Impossible. Petra pulled back the curtain into the sleeping area. She's in bed or on the bed. He joined her, and they went to where the crooked woman lay, slack-mouthed. Petra leaned to check for a pulse, but was already sure. Dead. How? Unwillingly disturbed, Petra drew one side of the coverlet over the body, then straightened. Shock? Rage? Who can tell? We should have checked on her. And possibly been stabbed for our trouble. He plucked a wicked-looking knife from among the covers. You thought her as bad as the rest. Petra pulled herself together. She was. She poisoned the soup, but... It doesn't change anything, he pointed out. Except that we can be accused of murder as well as assault and theft. True. Let's get out of here. He threw back the lids of chests to inspect their contents. He pulled out a skirt, striped in green and red, and a bodice of shiny scarlet. These look to be the cleanest. They look like whore's clothes. Petra searched the chests herself, but her choice seemed to be between grubby and gaudy. It's only for a little while, he said. We'll buy you better as soon as possible. But if your pursuers are looking for a nun, they won't find you in these sorts of clothes. Petra looked at the horrible clothes, but said, Wait in the kitchen. It didn't take long to strip down to her shift and put on the striped skirt and satin bodice. They smelled, but mostly of a cheap perfume. The skirt was too short, however, and the bodice too small. This must be an outfit of Solette's. Something of Jizzy's would be loose, but she couldn't bear the thought of more searching here, especially with the crone's corpse on the bed. She laced up the front of the bodice, but it still gaped, showing 2 inches of her shift. The bodice was also very low, but at least her shift wasn't. The only spare footwear was some backless, heeled slippers that would be ridiculous and impractical. If she was willing to try wearing clogs, she'd have to take them off their prisoner's feet. She had to take off her veil and cap. She bundled them, her belt, pouch, cross, and rosary in her habit, wishing she had something for her head. She saw a mob cap hanging on a hook and took that, praying it held no nits. At least the floppy frill would hide her face. She felt like a thief, but they'd pay for everything, or rather Robin would. She couldn't afford to use any of her small store of coins, with the future so uncertain. Uncertain and dangerous. She unwrapped her bundle and took the dagger out of her pouch. It was in a leather sheath that had straps to fasten it around her leg. She put it on. It felt strange there, but she wanted it at hand, and her pouch didn't fit this outfit at all. She put Robin's velvet coat back on to hide some of her outfit, and returned briskly to the kitchen. His brows rose in a humorous way, but there was another type of look in his eyes. Petra tugged the edges of the coat together and wished her ankles weren't exposed. "I'm ready." "So, my pet, am I." He pulled her into his arms and kissed her. Petra tried to resist, tried to make herself resist, but this seemed as inevitable as thunder after lightning, and the lightning had been sizzling for a long time. It had begun when he'd kissed her in the storm, or perhaps at first sight. It exploded now, after danger of death, with a searing passion that had her gripping his face and exploring deep in his mouth, as his hands pressed her hard against him. He still wore only his breeches and shirt, and she felt almost skin to skin. She slid a hand down inside his shirt to truly touch his flesh, firm, strong, hot, beneath her fingers. "Sir?" A voice out in the farmyard. They sprang apart, staring wild-eyed and breathless. "You all right, lad?" That was Poeck, coming closer. Petra turned, pressing hands to her cheeks. "That should not have happened, and must not again. Never, never, never." He shushed her. "Everything's in order," he called. "We're just borrowing some clothes." See how quickly he recovers. He's kissed 100 women, 1,000. You've kissed only one other man. "Remember to leave some money for the clothes," she said briskly, and went outside. Poeck's jaw dropped at the sight of her. "At least I don't look like a nun," she said to him.
"I'll give you that, lass. But is there any reason not to look like a nun?"
Clearly Robin hadn't told him, but he needed some explanation. "Someone might be looking for me." He pulled a face.
"What did you do then?"
"Nothing wrong," she assured him. "Some man fell in love with her," Robin said, "and didn't accept rejection well."
"Not a nun, then?"
the groom asked, still not happy. "I had every right to wear that habit, but I'm willing to disguise myself for now."
"Right you are," Poeck said, "but don't go wandering the streets unless you want to live up to expectations."
He seemed resigned to odd adventures. Another indication of the sort of man Robin Bonchurch was. The horses were already in place, and the postillion mounted. Robin went to speak to him, and Petra headed for the chaise. Robin's valet stepped into her way.
"The coat, ma'am."
His tone was even more sneering than usual, but she shrugged out of it and passed it over. He clutched it, as if it were a stolen babe. Petra didn't want to part from her prayer book and what it contained, so she carried her bundled-up habit into the carriage with her. Robin scooped up Coquette and put her in the carriage, closing the door. Petra watched him go to the women. He said something and then slit their bonds. The younger ones scrambled up, clearly stiff. Mère Goulard didn't try,
but a sudden thrusting of her lower lip might be in response to him telling her about the old woman. A mother was a mother, Petra supposed. He walked back to the coach and let Fontaine help him with waistcoat and jacket. He fastened the waistcoat buttons, but refused a neckcloth. Petra heard him say, "No point in trying to look respectable with our female companion in such a state." He came to the chaise, but when he opened the door, he said, "I'm riding. Fontaine will travel in here." He left before she could argue, and Petra supposed he was wise. Given what had just happened, privacy and close quarters was the last thing they needed. She bit her lip, however, to stop stupid tears. The valet entered, taking his seat as if he wished to be anywhere else in the world. Did he dislike all women? Did he hold her responsible for their misfortunes? Or was it simply because she'd caused him to have to ride in the rain? Certainly her present appearance couldn't help. He slammed the door shut, and the chaise rolled out through the gates to lurch back to the Boulogne Road. Once they reached the road, their way was smoother, though the road had obviously suffered in the storm. With the rising sun shining on flourishing fields, the macabre night seemed like a nightmare. It would be easy to pretend that it had never happened, and Petra wished she could. Instead, her mind worried over how to avoid further disaster. If she'd imagined Varzi, all should be well as long as her willpower was strong enough to resist Cock Robin's seductive wiles. But what if she hadn't imagined him? He would probably have searched the inn and Arbeville before deciding she'd left, and by then the storm would have stopped him. He'd set off early today, however, assuming she was continuing to Boulogne. She thanked God that she was now about 5 miles ahead and also getting a very early start. Better still, since she told Robin the reason for her urgency, he'd travel as fast as possible. Even if Varzi caught up, he couldn't know who she was. She looked nothing like Sister Immaculata. As long as she concealed her face, he'd never recognize her. Yes, perhaps she would reach England after all. To begin with, they saw no other travellers, but after about an hour they passed a group of young people walking to a harvesting job. A little later they worked around a slow cart loaded with vegetables and sacks, probably going from a local farm to Nouvion. Nouvion, where they'd change horses, which meant a new postillion. During a slow manoeuvre round a hole in the road, Petra let down the window and called to Robin. When he came over, she asked, "Won't the postillion tell everyone about the events last night?" "Not with the bribe I've paid him, or not immediately at least. Stop worrying." Petra raised the window, knowing it was wrong to be irritated by his self-assurance. But she was sure he'd never been involved in true danger before, and she hadn't truly explained the nature of the pursuit. They arrived in Nouvion as the town was just stirring, though a bakery spilled a stomach-tormenting aroma of fresh bread. Petra would have been willing to delay there long enough to buy some food, but they sped by and stopped at the posting house on the far side of town. It was a long, low building amid fields full of horses. As soon as the chaise stopped, Fontaine climbed out. Coquette jumped down too, before Petra had a chance to stop her. But she raced to Robin. Petra stayed in the coach, out of sight. A short, sinewy man hurried out of the house, still tucking his shirt into his breeches, and she heard him exclaiming at their early arrival and at the hour they must have left Arbeville. Robin spoke to him, and then came to the chaise. "We're too early. He hasn't brought the morning's horses in from the fields, and the postillions are still abed. He offers breakfast as we wait." There was no help for it, so Petra climbed down. "A decent breakfast would be very welcome. I'm going to get my cloak, however, muddy as it is, to hide these clothes a little." He helped her find it and helped her put it on, which caused a warning frisson. Every moment, every touch made the effect more powerful.
"How long to Boulogne?" she asked, swallowing.
"If God provides good roads, we can make it for tonight's sailing."
"Then I'll try prayers. But dressed like this, I fear they'll be even less effective than they were before."
"I can't imagine a rational God caring."
"Come along."
The posting house was a two-story building, but the ground floor was laid out much like the Goulard place. It resembled it in no other way, however, being clean and fresh, with a cat, a dog, and a baby in a cradle. The smell of grinding coffee already filled the air. Petra thanked the pretty young matron for her hospitality. She knew that the smaller staging posts didn't normally offer food or lodging.
"Such a storm!" Madame Crespin exclaimed. "And Madame Goulard's, ay, ay, ay! No wonder you left so early."
All the same, she was looking askance at Petra's clothes. Petra couldn't clutch the cloak around her without looking extremely strange.
"Is there anywhere I could wash, Madame?"
"I've no hot water yet, but you can take this bowl out to the pump in the back." She gave Petra a metal bowl, a pot of soap, and a thin towel. Petra thanked her, followed directions to a fenced yard where hens pecked, and some piglets ran around squealing, and was soon scrubbing her hands and face. The soap had a harsh smell, but it got rid of Goulard grime. She wished she could wash all over, especially her feet, and that she'd taken the time to change her shift. No point in that, however, with everything else so soiled. She poured the water onto the ground, rinsed out the bowl, and returned it to the kitchen. A short, sinewy man came into the room for another direction, yawning, his shirt hanging loose, muttering about early travellers. Madame Crespin shot a warning look at Petra, and he turned, then leered. Petra did clutch her cloak around herself then, and went in search of her protector. Robin was talking to their old postillion, probably impressing again the need for secrecy. A lad came running with a basket of bread, and soon everyone was around the kitchen table, enjoying warm bread rolls and raspberry preserves. The postillions got thick slices of ham as well, and flagons of something. It was probably part of their pay. Petra was happy with the big bowls of café au lait. Coffee, at last. While he ate, Robin was talking easily with the new postillion about the storm, the road, and travel to the coast. He'd said he spoke French like a native, and it seemed to be true. She didn't have the ear to be sure, but she suspected he was even roughening his accent a bit for the comfort of these country people. Soon their old postillion went off to his quarters, and the new one went out to help bring horses. Poic went along too. Madame Crespin began to clear the table, and Robin sent Fontaine for his writing desk. "As we still have a short wait," he said to Petra in English, "I might as well write a letter about the events of the night." Fontaine returned to tenderly place a travelling desk on the table. It was small and shallow, but a work of art. Its sides covered with marquetry designs of birds and flowers, all done in exotic woods and mother-of-pearl. As Robin sat, the valet slid open a drawer in the side to remove a pen and a small container of ink. He inspected both, then passed them over. Robin took out a sheet of paper and laid it on the sloped top. He began to write in a strong, purposeful hand, each letter beautifully formed, each line as straight as if he followed a guide. Petra was so struck by the neatness that she leaned closer to see if there were faint lines drawn to guide him. But no. She'd have expected careless handwriting with an excess of loops and squiggles. What did such writing say about this mystery of a man? He completed his account, and then hesitated.
Petra wondered what was wrong and wished he'd hurry. She heard horses being led by the house. They'd soon be able to leave. He dipped the pen again and scrawled. It was completely at variance with the rest of his writing. The robin was rough but legible. The rest was not. It might be Bonchurch, but it might well not. He sanded it, shook off the sand and folded it quickly, but still with every crease just where it should be. Then he took a ring out of his pocket. Fontaine dripped wax. Robin impressed a seal into it. Petra stared at the ring and its impression. The ring had the patina of old, well-used gold. The design and the impression it left was curlicued, but mainly a letter. It might be a B, but she doubted it. An A? An H? Perhaps a K or an R? Didn't she have trouble enough without having to wonder who this man really was? He stood, pocketing the ring and handing the document to Madame Crespin, with some coins and instructions about delivery to Monsieur de Guise. That impressed Madame greatly, as it should. They were one of the great families of France. He had mentioned them, Petra remembered. She shouldn't be surprised. Despite informality, he admitted that he was part of the English nobility and that he had just visited Versailles. He turned to her. Are you ready? Petra returned practicalities and hurried to the privy. She returned to hear Madame Crespin exclaim, Another early one! Petra's heart jolted, but through the front window she saw part of a large carriage loaded with luggage. Vazzi would never travel like that. She relaxed, but then a strident voice told her who had arrived. Lady Sodworth. The woman must have left Abbeville at first light. Petra went to the window and peered out from one side. The grooms were leading horses to Robin's chaise, but how could she get into it unobserved? She remembered her disguise and went to the door. Lady Sodworth stormed out of the coach, her strident voice slicing the air as she demanded horses immediately. The postmaster promised only a short delay. She marched toward the house, but then she whirled to scream, Arabella! Georgie! Get back in the coach! Of course, the little monsters paid no attention, and Lady Sodworth continued on to the house, ignoring them. The back way, Petra thought, and turned, but it was too late. Lady Sodworth swept in, blinking in the darker room, still complaining. But then her eyes widened. You! Petra took the only possible route. Me? She asked, as if confused. Lady Sodworth carried on in English. How dare you abandon me, you ungrateful wretch! The night I had with the storm and the children, I didn't sleep a wink. The sooner I'm out of this horrible country, the better. She seemed blind to her two children grabbing bread off the table and running out through the back door. Petra turned to do something about that, but Lady Sodworth grasped her arm. Oh, no! You're coming with me! Petra twisted free and dodged behind a chair. I don't know who you are, she cried. But you are clearly mad. Robin, help me! Lady Sodworth stared and Robin ran in. This woman, Petra cried, pointing. She imagines I am someone she knows and is trying to drag me away. Lady Sodworth stared at him. You, she exclaimed, not much given to originality. You were in Abbeville. Though not original or clever, she wasn't stupid, and she looked narrow-eyed between the two of them. So the nun is not so virtuous after all. Petra thanked God the woman had spoken in English, though she feared Madame Crespin was interpreting tone all too well. Robin faced her calmly and bowed. I'm afraid you've made some mistake, ma'am. This is my sister.
But...
The first trace of uncertainty crinkled Lady Sodworth's brow. That air of authority was working again.
Poick,
he called. The groom came in.
Poick, this lady is under an extraordinary misapprehension. Kindly assure her that my sister is my sister.
Poick's face twitched, but he must be used to such demands.
Of course, sir.
Robin waved him away and looked a polite question at the baffled lady.
And who are you?
She demanded. He bowed in an elegant but moderate manner.
Robin Bonchurch of Derby.
And you, ma'am?
Lady Sodworth.
When she added,
of Bristol.
It didn't come naturally. That only confirmed Petra's belief that the Sodworths were nouveau riche at best. Lady Sodworth studied Petra again, not swallowing the nonsense, but not knowing what to do. She turned her anger elsewhere.
What is happening here?
She demanded of Madame Crespin.
Why are there no horses for my carriage? I insist that you provide some immediately, or I shall lodge a most serious complaint.
Madame Crespin snatched up her baby and rushed out to chivy her husband to his work, or perhaps she simply escaped. Lady Sodworth glared between Petra and Bonchurch.
What, then, is your sister's name, sir?
He answered with a relaxed courtesy that managed to be dismissive.
Maria Bonchurch, ma'am.
Lady Sodworth's sharp eyes turned on Petra.
You do not dress your sister well, Mr. Bonchurch.
I do not dress my sister at all. Most improper.
Then where is her maid?
Absconded with gypsies, taking my sister's entire wardrobe with her. If you were a little larger, ma'am, I'd ask your charity for her. Lady Sodworth came close to snarling, baffled by his light, polite nonsense.
Horses are being brought now, ma'am,
Madame Crespin announced from the door, adding coldly,
and your children are chasing my hens. They'll not hurt them,
Lady Sodworth said, reaching for some bread.
I'll have coffee, woman.
Madame Crespin moved the plate away.
They will put them off their laying, ma'am. Kindly stop them, or I will.
Lady Sodworth's arm rose to slap the woman, but then she spat.
I will report your insolence, you... You ugly trull!
In her fury, she'd abandoned French, but the meaning was clear. After a fraught moment, Lady Sodworth caved, turned, and swept out into the backyard to scream at her brats. Robin beckoned, and Petra was only too glad to hurry outside. But Lady Sodworth caught up with them, literally dragging her infants.
So, Maria Bonchurch of Derbyshire, she screamed, how is it that you speak English with an Italian accent?
Petra turned to face her. Again, the woman had used English, but the postkeeper, postillions, outriders, and even Madame Crespin were all watching this show.
You're mistaken,
Petra said, trying to imitate Robin's manner.
It's a Derbyshire accent.
Lady Sodworth laughed.
Oh, you're a bold piece. I always suspected it, but that won't wash. I wondered why the nuns were so eager to get rid of you, with child.
No.
Spend much time with that brother of yours, and you will be. Come with me now, and I won't tell all these people the truth.
The predatory woman would do anything to get her own children off her hands. Robin stepped between them, and this time his tone was icy. Your horses are ready, ma'am. I suggest you get on your way. Colour flared in Lady Sodworth's cheeks.
Didn't you hear what I said?
It is hard not to hear you, but create trouble here, and I will repay you tenfold in England. Do not doubt that I can.
Who do you think you are?
I know perfectly well who I am, though I have no idea who you are.
Lady Sodworth,
the woman said, but even she knew that wasn't what he meant. Her face pinched to ugliness with the need to carry out her threat. But it would take a braver woman to face down Robin Bonchurch in this mood. She threw her children into the berlin, and in moments it rolled on its way in a cloud of dust.
She'll make trouble, Petra said, sick with dread.
Let her try, he offered his arm. I believe we can now depart, sister. He was trying to be at ease, but some residue of the confrontation with Lady Sodworth lingered. Petra took his taut arm, wondering again who this man was. At times his arrogant certainty was fit for a prince. He rode again, and she was glad of it. She couldn't stop teasing at the puzzle that was Robin Bonchurch. He should be called Riddlesome. His dress was ordinary, and he sometimes seemed a lightweight in all the worst ways. He'd been effective against Mayor Goulart, however, and against Lady Sodworth, in an entirely different way. He confessed to being high-born, but was he hiding a great title? She considered coquette, with her fringed butterfly ears, gold-tipped fur, and jewelled collar, and the haughty valet, Fontaine. She remembered that writing desk and old signet ring.
"Who is your master?"
she asked the valet.
"Who he says he is," he replied, in a pinched-nose tone that said he'd give her nothing more.
Petra turned to watch the passing countryside, frustrated by confusion. But it didn't really matter. Once they were in England, he could go his mysterious way and she would go hers. She'd never see him again. And any pang that caused was proof that it would be a good thing. They passed Lady Sodworth's lumbering berlin. But the heavy carriage with its big wheels was probably giving a smoother ride on the storm-damaged road than the speeding chaise. Petra was soon aching from bumps and the strain of resisting jerks and jolts, but she had no intention of asking that they go slower. If it were possible, she'd demand more speed. As before, she clung to the strap for balance, and she couldn't help remembering the wildness of the storm. The security of his arms, the shameless way he touched her, the thunder, the lightning, the kiss. They changed horses in Bernay, and found the road better thereafter. At Nampont, they learned the storm had never touched there. The postkeeper complained that the water carts should be out to keep down the dust. But no, the officials were penny pinchers. There was certainly plenty of dust. The road ran close to the coast, and the ground was sandy. Traffic became heavier, with people travelling to or from the channel ports. Hooves and wheels whipped dust into fog in places. That probably caused the accident. There was a great bang, splintering, then shrieks. Their chaise didn't hit anything, but it veered sharply left and jerked to a halt at a tilt. Petra watched Robin dismount and give his reins to Poeck. He shouted, "Stay inside!" at Petra, and went to the wrecks. Fontaine left through the door on the other side, probably simply to escape. Petra swooped to stop Coquette from following, then tried to see what was happening ahead. Two chaises going in opposite directions had locked wheels, creating a splintered jumble. Those horses were panicked, and all the others were restive. The chaise jolted and juddered as their horses fidgeted. Servants and gentlemen were running about, yelling for help, giving orders, or simply complaining. Petra couldn't see or hear Robin, but one thing was clear. The road was impassable, and likely to remain so for a while. "Truly, God does not favour my cause," Petra muttered to Coquette.
If we had been ahead of this, any pursuit would have been delayed. A new vehicle stopped behind. Petra twisted to look out, fearing to see Vartzi. But the head that poked out of a window was round and red. The man began to bellow in French, demanding that someone clear the way. "Stupid creature," Petra muttered. "And so are you, trying to go out there amid wild horse hooves." Another vehicle pulled up behind, a coach with coachman driving. Perhaps it was the diligence, the public coach. Surely Vartzi would use transportation under his own command. But she'd heard so many stories about him. One of his strengths was to do the unpredictable. She was safely out of sight and would stay that way. But then their chaise jolted and slid to a steeper angle. She wriggled to the other side and saw they were close to a ditch. She pulled up the hood of the cloak and managed the tricky business of climbing out of the safe side, flinching at the swirling dust and noise. She moved quickly to the edge of the road, farther from both.
"Stop wriggling to get to him, you stupid creature," she told the dog.
There were three carriages behind them now. The most recent was disgorging two purposeful men in blue uniforms. Perhaps they'd bring order to chaos. She couldn't see Robin until she realized he was the dusty, shirt-clad man helping to break apart the two locked wheels by brute force, Poik by his side. "Who is he?" Petra demanded of the dog. "Or are all Englishmen in truth mad?" Coquette had also spotted her beloved master and was more desperate to be let free. Why on earth didn't she have a leash? And where were the horses of Fontaine? She saw both at the side of the road behind her, along with others who'd chosen only to watch far from the dust. Petra joined him.
"Does Coquette not have a leash?"
"She has a number," the valet replied, with the usual suggestion of a sniff. "One to match each suit. Some are jewelled." Petra had known precious elegants who carried pets as accessories, but Cock Robin, who couldn't be bothered with a neckcloth.
"Where's the leash that matches his current attire?" she asked. "The stupid creature wants to be trampled."
"Let her be. He would be relieved of a burden."
"I don't believe that."
"No?"
The valet smirked.
"He acquired her only to impress a Versailles beauty. Once he had his way, the bitch was of no use to him."
"Which bitch?" Petra wondered, disgusted but fascinated.
"Yet this silly creature pesters him still," he sighed. "They so often do. Much to his disgust."
"Is that a warning for me, Fontaine?" When he merely smirked, she said, "Forget these clothes and remember my habit. And even if I were an ordinary lady, I'd have no interest in a man like him."
"Then you'd be unique among females."
"Lady Sodworth wasn't swooning, nor were the Goulard women. Where is Coquette's leash?"
"In his coat pocket, I assume."
And his coat pocket was heaven knew where. Petra watched chaos, her mind sifting through details. "If he's come from court," she asked, "where are his court garments?"
"He sends those by cart in order to travel faster. I warn him that one day they will be lost or stolen, but he pays no heed. As it is, we arrive in London ahead of them, and if a grand event occurs, I'm obliged to cobble together something from his older clothes."
The valet actually shuddered.
"Mr. Bonchurch enjoys fashion and court elegance?" she asked, watching the dust-caked man heave, joking with his fellow labourers. "When the mood takes him."
And that, thought Petra, was probably the truth of the man. He was a creature of whim and mood, and as reliable as a weathercock. Another cock. Coquette was still wriggling to get to her adored one,
so Petra picked her way along the rough verge until they were out of sight. As they went, she expressed her frustration.
Jeweled collars and ribbon leashes to match each outfit. And you, you're as bad. He used you. Don't you mind? He used you. But now he'd give you to a passing stranger if anyone would take you. It's shameful to worship someone like that.
Coquette merely tilted her butterfly head as if considering a puzzling concept.
You can't stop, though, can you? A female in love has no sense of dignity. I know it all too well. There were so many signs of the truth with Ludo. But did I pay any attention? Of course not.
She sighed, but then spotted raspberries. Long canes rambled through the fence, offering both a treat and escape from troubling memories. Petra tucked Coquette firmly under one arm and enjoyed them, suppressing any thought of taking some back to share. As she ate, she lectured the dog at length on dignity, prudence, and the wicked ways of devastatingly attractive men. She knew it would do no good at all.